The other thing we did, the military was doing, and we still do, is giving the children medals and certificates, because so many of them hadn't seen their dad or mom for a year. And the challenge, this was the first war where it was on the internet and they could see violence and they were worried about their mom or dad and had a lot of anxiety. And we had pizza parties and things like that going to the houses. And we found that for the spouses, if they were away a year, it took a year after they returned for them to return to normalcy. And there was no one prescription. They had to start treating each other as they did when they first met. And that's all we could tell them, because there is no formula to get couples back together.
Thinking of having your own podcast? Check out Anchor.fm. It's the easiest way to make one, and it's what I use for my podcast. What is life like for a military family? Hello, troopers. Welcome to the Afterthought on the Military Family Podcast, where you will hear stories straight from a military wife. And I am your host, Mommy Rich. Excited to explore adventures as a military family? Let's get started. Good day, troopers, wherever you are in the world. For this special episode, not only will you get to listen to a different side of our special guest, but I will also share a piece of my past career life. 18 years ago, also in August, I started working at the U.S. Embassy Manila, doing U.S. citizen services such as passport renewals and documenting children born in the Philippines by U.S. citizen parents. I did that job for 15 lovely years. Back in 2010 was the first time I met my special guest, who came to the Philippines not just as a regular American colleague. He was also not a consul to interview applicants, because he worked there as my former boss. But wait, there's more. He is not just a regular department boss. He was the head of the entire U.S. mission service in the Philippines for 3 years. I had the opportunity to work with him in some of his wonderful projects, such as the America in 3D in 2011, Fashion Forward, A September Night to Remember in 2013, and other events for the U.S. mission employees during his time. After his retirement in the Foreign Service in 2018, my special guest is now a senior strategic engagement leader at Special Operations Command and a VetCoin HQ board member, helping military veterans and their families in need. Troopers, please welcome former U.S. Ambassador Harry K. Thomas Jr.
Thank you so much, Mama Reggie. It is so great to see you. It was fun to see you in Manila, and congratulations on your new venture and the steadfastness you're showing as a military spouse.
Thank you so much, sir. I am actually very honored and pleased that you were able to squeeze tea time when you were in Manila. It was so wonderful to see you back then after all those years. I think the last time we met in person was when we were still both in the U.S. Embassy.
Yes, 9 years ago, almost fully 9 years. So, and I do remember that September 2013 night where we had fashion in the residence and talked about the environment.
Beauty. That's right. So
still, yes. Thank you for participating and being an integral member of this lovely night.
Oh, thank you, sir, because you made one of my dreams come true to become a model, a runway model. Thank you so much. Yes, and not only that, sir, I mean, now that we're talking about it, going back, you know, from the times that we were still doing the Foreign Service work, The America in 3D was very successful. It was, you know, one of the, I would say, one of the best ways of reaching out to the public and, you know, breaking that barrier that U.S. Embassy or let's say the U.S. services is far reached out. It's actually not the case. And through that event, the America in 3D, the public was more, you know, relaxed and they felt more welcomed by everyone, especially by the U.S. mission.
It was wonderful. It was an idea that we brought from Bangladesh, and it was great. I recall the Navy man getting everybody to dance.
Oh, great, yeah. Night. I remember that. That was the very first time I've encountered, I would say, you know, the military. I didn't even know that they had a band, and a very good band, I would say. They made everybody sing and dance, and everybody was so enjoying. It was really a wonderful experience to work with that project, because it was, what, every quarter, if I remember it right, sir, right?
Yeah, you did it several times. It was wonderful.
Yes, and in different places all over the archipelago.
Yes, yes, including Cebu, where I recently visited. We traveled around LVM, as we say, to show off the embassy.
Yes, that is why. We definitely got a lot of very nice feedback after that event. As I have mentioned earlier, it was really something that the public wasn't expecting that would happen, but it was really something that opened that invisible wall behind the public and the U.S. Embassy. It removed that impression that the U.S. Embassy has its own world and that we're, you know, we're very strict and all. No, we're just basically the same regular people out there who's trying to give out service to the public. Thank you for that, sir. So now we will start off with our, how would I say it, our beautiful episode. And we will start off, sir, as I asked you earlier, if you've been, you know, in any interviews about your military life. Personally, I didn't know that you were actually a military dependent. So we're going to go back to that time. I'd like to ask you, sir, about how did it go? Who was in the military in your family?
Well, thank you so much for that. And I would like to salute all of the veterans around the world and also the family. My grandfather was in World War I, as were several of his brothers. And my father and his brothers and my mother's brothers were in World War II in Korea. My father was with World War II in Korea, and which included service in the Philippines.
Really?
Yes, my father guarded Japanese prisoners in the Philippines after the war ended for over a year before he came home. My daddy spent about 10 years in the military. My sister really was a dependent. I was not. I was born after he got out of the service.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. But my mother, two of her three brothers spent 20 years in the service, and my first cousins were dependents. And my sister married a Navy chief, and her children were dependents.
Wow. So I would say the military influence in your family was all over.
Yes, I was so happy to see my cousin Rodney when I went to Cebu. He lives in Bacolod, and they drove over, took the Ro-Ro. And he's married to a Filipina, a lovely young woman. And he spent two tours in Iraq.
Oh, my goodness. Two mm-hmm. tours in Iraq.
And his brother-in-law has fought in Iraq and Afghanistan. So, sir, simply to say that my entire family has served our nation in all branches of the service. That's why when we honor veterans, we're honoring our family.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that, sir. And now I have an idea of how relevant or how special the military is to you personally and, of course, to your family, considering that a majority of your family members are or were in the military. So I'd like to ask, sir, now that you've mentioned that you were born after your dad, your father had served in the military, but with all of this exposure that you've had growing up, did you ever think of joining the military yourself?
Oh, yes, very much so. I thought that would be a path. My mother did not want me to go into the military, but I very much did, and I wanted to go to West Point. But I did not get an appointment to West Point or the Naval Academy. And that's quite all right. The good Lord had another plan for me. So I did not join the military. One of my friends from high school ended up going to the Naval Academy and serving honorably in the Marines. So I salute and thank him.
That's great. That's great. So yes, what you've said, probably there was really a different plan for you at that time. You did try. you wanted to. I mean, the intention was there, but destiny had a different path for you. So with that being said, sir, I want to know what kind of influenced you to try the Foreign Service.
Another veteran, I worked for 3 years as an urban planner in New York. My boss was a man named Edward J. Loeb, who was a famous lawyer and urban planner and a World War II navigator.
And, wow.
And he was the one who had been in the Foreign Service in India, and he recommended the Foreign Service to me. I did not know anything about it. He was my boss, so I took the test. I was fortunate enough to pass.
Yay! And would you remember, sir, what year was this?
Oh, sure. I took the test in those days was in two parts. I took the first part in December of 1982 and the second part on St. Patrick's Day, 1983 in Virginia. And then it takes another year to join. You have to go through a background check, a physical check, a financial check. And I joined June 26, 1984. In the 22nd A-100 class, as we call it.
Uh-huh.
And I went off to Peru.
Oh, okay. So your very first assignment was in Peru.
As a vice consul.
As a vice consul. Wow. That is amazing. I'm sure you were probably very excited. Have you been traveling, sir, before you entered the Foreign Service?
No. That is what makes me so high on the Foreign Service, because I had never left continental United States. I did not speak a foreign language, and the Foreign Service has enabled me to visit many, many countries and get to know many people and learn languages and culture. And so I tell young American kids that they can do the same thing, because many of them have traveled much more than I have. So they have an advantage that I did not have. So I very much encourage them to do it, but I had not traveled.
Okay. Well, that's very true, sir. You've mentioned about, because of the Foreign Service, you reached other places, you've reached countries and helped other people. Going back to your connection with the military because of your family, have you encountered military families all throughout your Foreign Service life?
Yes. Well, as you know, we have the Defense Attaché Office. Every embassy is different in size. Not everyone has as large a scope as we had in Manila. But in every embassy that I work, we have the Defense Attaché Office, and there would be spouses and children. We also had Marines who had no spouses, of course. So I very much, in every post, we work with the military.
That's right. And if I may just also share, sir, in the American Citizen Services, I think majority of our applicants are children of U.S. military service members, especially the ones that were born in Subic or in, you know, in Angeles and in Olongapo. Those were the majority of the ACS service, that we get to hear different kinds of stories about how their parents met, and it was during either the war or when the U.S. military troops were still in the Philippines. So some are very heartbreaking, but then some are I would say tear-jerking in a sense that they get reunited after we get to document them to become U.S. citizens as well. So,
you know, I'm glad you brought up something as heartbreaking, because for me, I honor the mostly men who take care of their children. It's our responsibility to take care of our children. And as you and I both know, there were far too many people who did not take care of it and who did not acknowledge that this was their child, who was entitled by law to U.S. citizenship, and then they could make a decision of whether they won. And it was and continues to be heartbreaking to me. My friend Richard Merck, who was a singer, he did not get to know his dad until after his father was dead. And I encountered several times Apple Day App of the Black Eyed Peas, who never was able to meet his father. And he had that sense of longing. Now, he's a millionaire, gives back a lot to the Philippines, especially Pampanga. However, he still has that sense of loss. And I say that because I had a Filipino friend who lives in the United States, who's no military connection at all, but she told me that she became very wealthy in the United States after growing up in poverty in the Philippines. But the one thing she never doubted in the Philippines was that she was truly loved. And the people who are the offspring of men who are cowards, and they truly are, because you have a responsibility to take care of your children.
This podcast is powered by Anchor.fm. Making a podcast is free and easy with Anchor.fm.
Those people have that longing. And so whether you're Apple Day App with millions of dollars or Richard Merck with a successful career, when you don't know who your dad is, you will have that sense of longing.
I totally agree, sir. Growing up, because I grew up as, you know, being brought up by a single parent, by my mom, though I knew my father, but he was kind of estranged to me. What more for these children who never even met their fathers, don't even know how their fathers look like, probably just because of their resemblance, but had never, you know, heard or seen anything from their fathers. And we say this as like, you know, we're putting it, the majority of these are fathers, because at that time, especially at the old years, it was really more of the U.S. military men, you know, who were in the Philippines and have left offsprings. Though some, they would say that they didn't know about, you know, these pregnancies, but as what you've said, majority, they just left and didn't bother to find out or search how their families left in the Philippines. How are they doing? And I know for a fact, in the United States, there is such what we call child support, that, you know, the government is really kind of strict when it comes to implementing it. Comparing it to the Philippines, I guess it's another, you know, lapse with regards to the dependents, whether you're a U.S. or a Filipino, you know, child. It's really not as strict as with the U.S. policy. And with that, a lot of, you know, parents who are irresponsible get away with their, with what they did.
Badly. And it breaks your heart. Because children are innocent. And so, yes, and the reality is that, as you said, mostly men, I don't want to leave out a woman just in case, and not knowing. But that's the sad, sad case. But last year, I didn't meet her in person, but virtually I met a cousin from Vietnam for the first time. Yeah, one of our cousins, whom also I've never met because I have a large family. Second or third cousin was in the military and had a child in Vietnam whom he left. But she was able to, as an adult, a couple of years ago, make it to the United States. And she reached out to our family. We were happy to welcome her in. We've had several conversations with her. She's a grown woman now. The Vietnam War ended many years ago. So she has not met her biological father, unfortunately, but she's made a life for herself, and she's actually met several of my cousins and others of us through our Facebook page and phone calls. So it's almost a happy ending, but she's living a good life here. She's married and wonderful, but that's a rare, rare story. But I will tell you this. It was a good story. I went to Cebu, not to Cebu, to Angeles, and I met a friend of mine named Roy Archer. He was an American widower who had never had children, who married a Filipina that he met in Angeles, who was an executive. She was a professional woman. She is a professional. And they have three little girls. But Roy Archer's father was a major war hero. He was one of a Tuskegee Airman. He was the ace of the Tuskegee Airmen. Lee Archer, who got the Congressional Gold Medal. They made a movie about him.
Wow.
And Tuskegee Airmen are very famous for only, I think, losing one plane during World War II. And Roy Archer's father, the great hero, was a man when he retired and became a banker, gave a loan to Mr. Reginald Lewis. And that loan allowed Reginald Lewis to eventually become first African-American billionaire. And of course, his wife is Loida Lewis. So there are great stories and things go around. And so I was so pleased that Roy and his wife and children are doing well in Pampanga. And it's a fantastic story.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. As what I've mentioned to you when we met in when you were here in Manila, the goal of this podcast is really to inspire other people, not just the military families, but everybody who will be touched with successful stories of people who had served the military. Because the civilians only know a certain percentage of what military families go through. And I am only one voice that can actually speak out of my own experience, but I get to learn from others as well. And your story, other people's stories definitely will inspire, you know, people with hopelessness in their lives, especially with what's going on. And I know as well that what you do right now, the work that you do, the traveling that you do is all for an advocacy to help veterans. And I, for one, sir, I'm very grateful for what you do.
Well, thank you. You know, when I was Director General of the Foreign Service, it was the height of the Iraq and Afghan wars. And we copied what the military was doing. One of the challenges we had is when the spouse, and again, mostly men, was deployed for at least a year, they probably did not see their spouse and children. When they came home after a year, it was very difficult. And we had one quarter of the Foreign Service deployed to Afghanistan and Iraq also. And so these husbands and wives experienced challenges when they came back. We didn't want families to break up. So we started learning, having a lot of counseling sessions, psychologists. And of course, not everybody wanted to take advantage of that. We tried. The other thing we did, the military was doing, and we still do, is giving the children medals and certificates, because so many of them hadn't seen their dad or mom for a year. And the challenge, this was the first war where it was on the internet, and they could see violence, and they were worried about their mom or dad, and had a lot of anxiety, and we had pizza parties and things like that, going to the houses. And we found that for the spouses, if they were away a year, it took a year after they returned for them to return to normalcy. And there was no one prescription. They had to start treating each other as they did when they first met. And that's all we could tell them, because there is no formula to get couples back together. We're very proud of that. We copied it from DOD. But also at the same time, there was great sadness and anxiety when, you know, it did not work for every family.
Yeah, I also feel, sir, what you've said, I felt that. I would say that I'm actually still very lucky that my husband has not been deployed to like any war zones. I know it can happen very soon, especially after our assignment in Guam. Or he may be assigned like a, you know, the sea duty, because he's now in shore duty. So lucky for us right now that we're still all together. But as what you've said, deployment can make or break a family. And not just because of the long distance, but the effect that it can, you know, attribute to the service member. Psychologically, mentally, emotionally, there's a lot of breakdowns that happen in a person who is in deployment. And it just not only affects the person himself or herself, but also the families or the people around them. With the things that you do, as what you've mentioned, it may not be for everyone. It may not apply to everybody in the military service, but we can only do so much. You can only do so much. And that is why I guess it is very important that the society has a participation. I'd like to ask you, sir, about, you know, the experiences and the expertise that you've had. What is the importance of the society in the military service life?
Well, I think we really have to take time to get to know people. It's very easy to hang a yellow ribbon on a tree. It's very easy to applaud somebody or say thank you for your service and be genuine. But you really, in any relationship, you're going to be serious, you have to take time to get to know them. And that is the only way that you can truly support someone. Clearly, some of us have financial ability to donate money. Where we live in Tampa, they collect cigars to send to military members who are deployed. But you've got to also be holistic and find ways to engage family. And there are so many different ways to do that. I see here in Tampa, so many people in active duty and veterans, SOCOM and CENTCOM, in the way that they try to support families with family days, boat rides, plane rides, just the opportunity to get to know people, reassure them always being there. So that, I just say, really try to find a way, and you can't do it every day, to find a means that's comfortable for you also to get a little deeper, because these are our brothers and our sisters and our nieces and nephews.
Yes. It seems simple, especially for, you know, for people who are not familiar with the military life. It may seem to be like, that's it? That's all that you need? But it's really more than that. It's, you know, the reaching out is what you've said. Getting to really know the person or the families is easier said than done. So a lot of these support or organizations that support the military families and the service members, they really make a difference to our lives in the service and to our partners. So, sir, let me just go back a little with your foreign service life. I am curious myself because both of us had worked with the foreign service, but of course, in a different level. So I'd like to ask you, sir, having a background with the military, you know, your family is very well versed with the military exposure as you were growing up, and you deciding to enter the foreign service. And we know for a fact that foreign service officers, they also get to travel, what, every 3 years? They get to be stationed or assigned. So what are the similarities and the differences between the military life and the foreign service life in your perspective?
Well, thank you for that question. Now, first, we did not serve at a different level. We had different responsibilities, but we all were one team, one mission. The Foreign Service National Community, the backbone of every embassy and consulate. We thank you for your service. for me, it is a different life between military and the foreign service, because every military member signs up with the understanding that they may be in combat, they may be putting their life at risk. When I joined the foreign service, we had many people who were veterans who had been in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. And the foreign service of that day, many had to serve in Vietnam as foreign service officers carrying guns. Yes, foreign service officers were detached to USAID, and they did development projects, but they carried pistols and M16s.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
I didn't know that, sir.
That was during Vietnam. But the foreign service that I joined, we were not thinking that we would be putting our lives in danger. So it was far different. However, the Iraq War changed that for those who served in Iraq and Afghanistan. Not to the extent it did for our military colleagues. But we had provincial reconstruction teams in Afghanistan back, just like we had in Vietnam, similar. And where people were exposed to violence, where people passed away, I had to bring three bodies home, personally escort them. And two of them were people who died in Iraq and Afghanistan, one in Chicago, one in Oklahoma. So, and I never forget those, that tragedy of many, many more from the military. So military is much more dangerous. Although we do have danger, we lost friends on August 7th, 1998, when our embassies were blown. But for the most part, our lives are not quite as dangerous. That said, now there are over 20 posts where foreign service officers and specialists must go without their spouses or partners, and they have the same re-engagement challenges. Of course, as you know, in Iraq and Afghanistan, we had a lot of foreign service nationals.
Yes.
Serving, putting themselves at risk. So, and they experienced some challenges, especially PTSD. It's not unique to the military. We had foreign service officers and foreign service nationals, and they will have it for the rest of their lives. But generally, it's not as dangerous. Benefits are similar, although our pay is higher. They can retire at an earlier time than we can. But I think the ethos of duty, honor, country, from West Point, do not lie, do not tolerate anyone who lies, which you see at the Air Force Academy, is something that we hold dear in the State Department. And we try to live up to that every day, as do our military colleagues.
Especially, sir, with the work that we do. Like now, I'm directly connected with the military because of my husband.
Afterthought on the Military Family is a proud member of the Rumble Royale Podcast Network. Thanks for listening. If you are new here and enjoyed this episode, please follow the podcast by tapping the bell to be notified of new episodes. This helps military families who want to live their best lives find the show. And if you would like to share your story, please connect with us through our Facebook page, Mommy Reg, and we would love for you to be part of the show. Remember, you are not alone. Until next time.